Oh.
What's going on, Laurier? It's your favorite three people with the news back at it again. Welcome to the show.
And for once, we have the full cohort of news hosts, all at once. So that's great. Give it up for us.
Yeah.
So first, we'll start off with some local Ontario news regarding COVID and COVID restrictions. So as many of you may know, we're going back to in-person classes by about February 7th, depending on your year, of course. And this decision has kind of been made under the assumption that we have kind of reached the peak of Omicron. So basically, that means that the cases have stopped rising as rapidly. However, the problem is that the ICU numbers, like people who are admitted to hospital, tends to lag 2 weeks behind. Lags 2 weeks behind the number of cases that we have. So although that we're decreasing the number of cases, or like decreasing how fast the cases increase, it's still, we can't like let our guard down just yet, because it could still affect the people in the ICU and so on. And then that kind of brings us into our next story, which is that certain provinces like Quebec have tried to implement this tax, I think, on people who are unvaccinated, kind of to like ease up the stress on public health resources. And actually, I think a large percentage, I think 55% of Ontarians are in support of that. So what do you
Wow.
guys think about that?
I think that is ridiculous. A, that's not gonna work. B, and don't get me wrong, like I'm vaccinated. I get your vaccine if you want. If you don't want to get it, I don't really care. But all I'm saying is that is just ridiculous. That's just gonna cause so much like political issues. That's just gonna polarize people to an extent that we haven't even seen, and we're already in like a crazy world. So I really hope they don't do that in the rest of like Ontario. But if they do, well, get ready for the rebellion, guys.
Yeah, like I honestly I see where they're coming from with it. Because I mean, Canada's healthcare system is really under stress right now due to the number of people. But the thing is, it's not like, although the majority of people who end up seriously ill are either have pre-existing conditions or are unvaccinated with pre-existing conditions, I feel like that's, it sets the wrong tone. Like it seems like a very I don't know, authoritarian stance to take.
Exactly.
We're already having like people are already tired of restrictions and lockdowns and everything. And I feel like becoming more authoritarian is not the way to go about it. But although I do see where people who would vote or something like that are coming from, because according to the article on CTV News, the majority of people who are supporting this are like seniors, so like 55 and over. Which makes sense for them, because like they're more at risk if they're exposed to someone who has COVID. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's just difficult, right? Because like you said, you have to consider like different age groups and
Yeah.
who's more susceptible and more
Mm-hmm.
prone and stuff. So I guess in that sense it gets kind of tricky.
Yeah.
So yeah,
Because
definitely.
like only 50% of people in or age group, which is like the under 35, would be in support of that. But 72% of seniors, or 7 out of 10 of every seniors, are in support of this. So
Yeah.
it really shows how much people's stake, I guess, stake in the matter affects their decision on these type of things. And it's actually quite similar in the US, that people, well, not similar in the US, but in the US you can really see how it became kind of a party issue. Because people have kind of incorporated their stances towards COVID into their political identity. So it's like Republicans are more inclined to think of COVID as less of a risk. And it's not necessarily, like, even the older ones, and it's not necessarily because they're at risk themselves. It's just because that's what their party identification dictates that they think. And then the same thing happens on the Democrat side, where people are like, in favor of extending lockdowns or like emergency measures because they feel that that would be the best way to deal with it. But at the same time, like, neither group is really taking into account the statistics and the facts about positions that they're supporting. Because like the Democrats who are saying that, yeah, we're in favor of lockdowns and like online school and remote learning and all of that, are not taking into account the fact that children, one, are less of a risk, and two, closing schools and having online learning is not, is one, not good for the kids, and two, doesn't have any significant impact on decreasing the number of cases. So I feel like something like this, where you're taxing people based on whether they're vaccinated or not, would probably do the same thing in terms of like dividing people among political lines. And that could just make everything worse.
I agree with that. It's just that, like you said, I think there is a heavily influenced, like there's an influence in regards to like the political aspect, I think. So I think, yeah, like you said, depending on, you know, which party you're with, that can like alter, you know, your views and stuff like that. So I think you're right.
And the thing, the thing to remember is when you do something like this, you're going to take a bunch of people who were previously pro-vax, pro-lockdown, and then they're going to be like, no, never mind, I'm anti-authoritarian. Exactly. Anti, like, because this basically is authoritarianism in a sense. Like, not like obviously like how it is in like Russia or China, but it's getting there. And yeah, I strongly don't support it. I'll put that out there.
It's gonna take people who would have been willing to get their vaccines or like willing to do stuff. It's gonna make them feel less inclined to do that, because now it's more like the government is telling us what to do instead of like trusting people. And I think the whole reason that people resist these type of things is because they want to feel trusted. They want to feel like the government trusts them and respects them as people instead of just telling them what to do like kids.
For sure. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. But on some positive news, I guess, in BC, they're trying to shift to managing the pandemic more like the common cold. So they're like switching to handling it less in a strict way, like discouraging PCR testing for most of the population, reserving and then that reserved the capacity for healthcare workers and high-risk people. And they've also removed the minimum length of time that you need to isolate after having the virus. So they're kind of transitioning into more of like living with COVID instead of trying to prevent it or get down to like zero COVID or still under a lockdown. But they're basing it mostly on self-management. So it's like, if you have symptoms, then basically you just stay home. But all you need to do to return to your life is just feel better. So once you don't have symptoms anymore, like, you're good to go.
Yeah. No, it's interesting because I actually went to BC in the summer, and at that time for us here, it was pretty intense. But like when I went there, like I was like, oh, like I'm traveling right now and stuff. And so I was kind of worried about that. But when I got there, the entire vibe was so different in the sense of how, like you said, with how they're kind of managing it or how they're viewing COVID. And that was back in August. And like, you know, it's been some time, but I still kind of noticed it there. It was very different. I felt like I was like extra paranoid. And I mean, that's how we are here, right? Because we were used to lockdown the entire time. But when I went there, it was just like they were accepting the fact that this is something that they're going to have to live with and cope with it. And I guess you could say in healthier ways, in the sense where there's not a lot of mental stress or pressure and anxiety and fear and whatnot. So I definitely could see that when I went down there. So, I mean, it's a good way to go about it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Although, I mean, they're not 100% open yet because it's not yet endemic. They're saying that they haven't had enough evidence to say that it's endemic right now. So obviously the same kind of regulations apply, where you're like recommending to wash your hands, don't go in large groups, that kind of thing. And they still have like bars and nightclubs are closed. And other things are like 50% capacity and you can't have weddings or funerals. But at the same time, it's like their mindset is shifting, I think. So yeah, but that's pretty much all I have for Canada. Maybe we could move on to something international with Fatima.
Yeah, so I mean, there's kind of a lot going on with international news as well. And I feel like in the midst of like this whole COVID thing, we kind of, I mean, for myself, at least, it kind of gets swept under the rug and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that did come to my attention was a video by AJ Plus. I went and I found that, and there was a footage of a US drone strike that led to killing innocent Afghan like civilians. Wow. And that footage has been released, and 10 members of the same family were killed. This was this was in the August 29 airstrike. And it was reported that the US military said that they were targeting a specific member. So his name was Zimari Ahmadi, and he was an aid worker whom the US wrongfully believed to be working with ISIS-K.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and so the footage shows Ahmadi pulling up to like his home, and that was a home that he shared with three of his brothers, and then, you know, the family members with them as well. And that day, you know, as he, you know, was coming home, his nieces and nephews, you know, had rushed to come greet him. And that's when the strike hit, and it killed him, two other adults, and then seven children.
Oh my God.
And documents were recently uncovered by like the New York Times, and they had shown that the airstrike incidences like this, you know, it's very common, and it's just a lack of taking accountability for it. And there's a pattern that's shown where death tolls were undercounted, right? So, I mean, there are so many other instances, but they haven't been reported like this one.
Yeah.
And so in these incidences, you know, it's just like hitting and leaving civilians dead. But despite that, there has been no records of, you know, action that's been taken for this. So in response to this, the U.S. spokesman for Central Command, he had said that, in quotations, mistakes do happen even with the technology in the world we live in today. So there's that. Yeah.
Wow. And let's not just,
I feel like quickly, that's really an excuse when people got killed though.
Yeah.
Let's
say, oh, mistakes happen.
Guys, let's not forget really quickly that Julian Assange basically got demonized by the entire American government, and they're trying to like put him on trial because he was highlighting the airstrikes in Iraq they were trying to cover up, and because they didn't want that information to get out, they're putting their whole effort into getting this man back to the US to put him on trial. So
yeah, it's like there's reoccurring patterns, right? And like time and time again, I guess you could say. And it's just at this point, right, if it's been so many years and we keep seeing officials' responses being something along the lines of what I had just quoted, it you know, I think it doesn't take a lot to realize that
I don't care.
You know what I mean? Yeah, like that there's no care, there's no recognition. And obviously these are very intentional. And even, you know, the apologies or action that's being taken is very, very undermining. You know, just saying sorry, not even saying sorry, actually, just saying that, you know, mistakes do happen, even in the world that we live in today, is quite sad and disappointing, right?
Yeah, it just shows that it's like they're not even recognizing the humanity of those people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's just, yeah, it's super disappointing. I mean, there's always something, right? So many different countries, and there's always stuff going on like this, and the responses are always like that. And it just, yeah, it's never positive. So I read these things and it really gets me not feeling so good, you know? I don't know.
Yeah. I don't even know.
Yeah, we have to, you know, it's good to highlight these things so we can hold the government accountable, the U.S. government, any, honestly, many governments do this, like,
yeah,
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And they're just like, oh, well, it is what it is. It's part of war, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, man, you killed like 10,000 civilians just to kill like 10 ISIS members. You know what I mean? Like, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. And I think the thing is that, like, because if it's, I mean, it happens everywhere, right? Like you said, even in our, you know, every country, like the system, the government and whatnot. And it's good to talk about these things because it can bring more recognition and somewhat of an attention and accountability can be, I mean, more of us can know about it, right? And so that could do some good. But I feel like sometimes we tend to forget that, oh, you know, because it's not happening in my country, I don't think it'll make a difference if I talk about it or if I, you know what I mean? But I think that in the long run, in the bigger picture, it will help. Yeah. And it does help, right? So for sure.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys know anything much about Canada's plan to bring in the refugees, the Afghan refugees?
No, I don't.
I haven't come across a lot. I know initially when, you know, things were going on in Afghanistan, it was stated that there was an X amount of numbers of refugees that were coming into Canada that were accepted and whatnot. And I do know like a good portion of people have successfully made it here. I just haven't come across any updates, which is kind of interesting.
Saw a couple things like a few days ago, maybe like last week or 2 weeks ago, where it was saying that apparently the original pledge was like 40,000 people that they're trying to settle. And so far they've settled 6,750 since the Taliban takeover happened last year. But people are saying that this is not like enough. Like it should be faster. There should be more. And that the bureaucracy is taking too long and like putting these people's lives at risk.
For sure. Yeah, no, 100%. That number in itself is, yeah, when you said that, that is definitely very low. Mm-hmm. Like I get it. Like, you know, there's still COVID, like there's so much that like each country is kind of going through, but despite that, there should be more of a steady, progressive, like, you know, effort into this. So it's kind of sad knowing that that's not happening.
Because they said like it should be taking 2 years, but if they started last year and only 6,700 have been settled so far, I think, and there's 40,000 that they had pledged to accept, that's gonna take way more than 2 years.
For sure, like that would take like years and years, which is not effective or helpful in any way in that sense, right? So
exactly. Yeah. And there's even a story of a family from, well, it's from last year, but it just shows like how much red tape and how much like unnecessary bureaucracy is involved in this, because this family was accepted from October to come to Canada. But now they're stranded, I think, in they spent a month in Qatar and then moved on to Albania because the Canadian embassy wasn't able to help them finish their process to migrate to Canada in Qatar for some reason.
Yeah,
but they weren't told why, and they were just being shuffled from place to place to find some kind of solution to get to Canada. And like it's been like that for them for months.
I wouldn't be surprised if there's other families out there who are also tied up in a similar situation that are not reported or talked about too. So it's kind of like you think about it, right? And you're like, oh, like I wonder where they are and how they're gonna, you know, end up coming here like that. And I mean, it's great, but if that's how the process will be for majority of the people that want to come down here from there, I don't think that's also an effective and great way to go about it either, right?
Exactly. Because it's saying that this is just one family, but there's probably many others who are experiencing, like, this is just a snapshot of what people are experiencing trying to come.
I think we can all agree, and if you don't agree with this, you're an idiot. The world, the governments of the world have failed the people of Afghanistan for nearly 30 years.
Yeah, for
honestly, like, don't forget Canada's involvement with this. Don't forget the UK. It's not just America. There's many other actors, mm-hmm. and they've all just sort of just pulled out and just forgot about the people of Afghanistan. And this war was for literally nothing at all.
Yeah.
But
and it's I feel like it's crazy because sometimes I feel like maybe years ago, talking about something like this and saying that, you were the idiot. Like, you were the idiot for saying this, like, out loud. And maybe I would be more vocal about it because that's where I'm originally from and whatnot. So I think people would just kind of be like, huh, like,
just you're biased towards it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or like, where are the facts to back this up, right? Mm-hmm. It's interesting because I guess time kind of could tell, right? Like, so years went by, and I feel like at this point, you really don't need to have additional access to know this. I think it's to the point where they've admitted, like, the US and countless countries and their leaders have admitted to these actions, right, that they've committed and stuff. So yeah, it's not pretty.
Honestly, since we're on the topic of people who have been failed by the international government, let me tell y'all about Yemen, or not tell y'all, but just give an update. I was gonna talk about the Russia-Ukraine thing, but honestly, like, nothing really new. It's all a whole lot of, oh my God, Russians are at the border, and then a bunch of NATO and Americans sending. It's just nothing, like, super interesting. It's sort of the same. But keep watch, everybody. World War III could very well start in the coming weeks. Hopefully not. Knock on wood. But, let's go. Let me tell y'all about Yemen. So I think I definitely discussed this, like, last year. Yeah, for sure. Maybe even this year. I don't know. It's a real big crisis that everyone's just kind of like, oh, well, it doesn't affect me. Mm-hmm. Even though there's literally thousands of people starving to death. But anyways, let me just give a quick summary of what's going on in case anyone doesn't know. And I feel like people should know because it's unbelievably ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, the conflict began during the Arab Spring 2011. Yemenis were protesting against the president, Ali Abdullah Saleh, and they basically demanded democracy, like how everyone was kind of doing during the Arab Spring. So his vice president, his name is Mansour Hadi. I don't have his first name in my notes, unfortunately. Whatever, he took over the presidency, and this kind of just sparked a whole bunch of little mini conflicts. The Houthis, who are a horrendous rebel group, horrendous, lots of child soldiers, just lots of atrocities. They began sort of taking over the country in response, because, like, when the vice president took over, there was a lot of political instability. You know how it is. It's the same in every country when this happens. So yeah, the Houthis started taking over. They were a politically motivated Shia rebel group backed by Iran. And once Iran is into it, then, you know, the Saudis are going to be into it. And once the Saudis are into it, America's into it. And so this whole sort of conflict kind of evolved into, like, a proxy war between basically, like, the West and Iran. But, like, each sort of little, each part, member of the coalition who was fighting against the Houthis and the Iranians, they kind of all had their own little political agenda. So it is extremely complicated. I recommend, if anyone's interested, go on YouTube or just Google it. There's a lot of, like, interesting, like, infographics and whatnot that will kind of explain it, because it's so complex, it's hard to break it down. But anyways, back to current news. So the Houthis have launched 2 missile attacks at the UAE, United Arab Emirates, in the last week, raising the stakes in this complex conflict. Obviously not good, but here we are. So there was an assault yesterday, Monday, which the Houthis said was aimed at a base hosting the U.S. military. Again, not good. And it was thwarted by American missile interceptor, whatever. And so the Houthis said they're punishing the UAE, who was part of the Saudi-led coalition, which the U.S. is also part of. basically just for fighting in Yemen, just being involved in a conflict they shouldn't have been involved with in the first place. And so, yeah, this conflict is kind of getting back in the news. There's a lot more deaths. It kind of fizzled out with COVID, even though the battles never stopped. So, yeah, honestly, like, I recommend anyone listening to this to go donate some money to, like, any, like, charity. Personally, I recommend the Islamic Relief Foundation, I think it's called.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause, yo, they're literally starving because of the sanctions that the U.S. and Saudi are basically putting on the country for their own reasons. So the regular people, the citizens, are starving. Y'all, please help these guys, because no one seems to be doing it, and it's kind of just there. And it's ridiculous. It's like this most ridiculous conflict I've heard of in a long time.
Mm-hmm. And like, it's been going on for a while too, right? And once again, the topic of Yemen and the country and its people is not talked about. And I think it was last year or the year before, probably. I think that's the only time where I really saw it. Maybe social media played a big role in that.
Yeah.
But so many people didn't know that the, you know, Yemen as a whole was, or still is, on the verge of just a total wipeout. So it's sad, you know. I think it's just, yeah, they're like in the worst state ever.
I feel like the Western media just, I haven't seen anything about Yemen, to be honest.
Yeah.
Mainstream sources that I've seen.
Yeah,
like there's literally nothing.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know, this might sound a little absurd, but probably not. With the topic of like COVID, I think in a sense for news outlets and for many of these countries who are committing these, you know, atrocities, it's beneficial, I think, because we have COVID as a universal thing, right? And it's not just, you know, targeted for one country. And I think that everything else just gets swept under. Honestly, like if you're listening in on the radio, if you're watching on TV, like that's first and foremost, it's always about COVID, COVID, COVID. And then you get additional, and then you get additional selected, very selective topics on what's happening globally or internationally, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So it's almost like you really have to like dig your way and find additional information that explains fully what's happening and what can be done to help or prevent this from, you know, to further continue.
Honestly, I recommend anyone listening and you too, if you want like more information about this and like Afghanistan, I look at Al Jazeera.
Yeah.
It's based out of Qatar. It focuses on like the Middle East and Africa. Doesn't even really touch on COVID at all, which is good, because bro, it's like COVID is the same everywhere we get it. Wear a mask, get vaccine, like there's nothing new. It is what it is, you know what I mean? But there are really people in crisis, like starving, and then we have news coverage, oh, like 130 cases today, like bro, no one cares.
And like those numbers can easily be accessible to us, like we could just Google it and we can get like the numbers, you know, like on a website,
yeah,
or, like, for our region or our area, right? And so and then I feel like we also forget that these countries, let alone them going through these types of crises, they also have to deal with COVID too, and it's like, who's talking about that, right? So there's so many layers to it, and that's, you know, none of those layers are getting any sort of recognition that they should be as well. So
honestly.
And then I feel like also even like COVID is the same, it's the same disease everywhere,
mm-hmm.
but can you imagine for the countries that are already struggling with like economic collapse and war and all of that to deal with COVID as well? Like, I'm sure people are struggling with it there too, but it's just like we at least have vaccines and we're complaining about being locked down, but mm-hmm. some people don't even have enough vaccines, or like they don't have enough infrastructure in their healthcare system to deal with what would happen if too many people got sick, like if there was a serious outbreak, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like I mean, like COVID is one thing, right? But it's like a lot of these countries, when you think about other illnesses that require medication in general, right? Like they once again don't have access to that, right? If you have like a long-term illness that requires you know, medication continuously, it's like, how do you have mm-hmm. access to that, right?
Exactly.
And so it's, like that. And I just feel like, you know, like that's the first time for us globally, like COVID was the first time that this kind of happened. And it's like for them, it's like they've been going through similar circumstances for their entire lives. And so it's just crazy that when this happens, like obviously, I mean, as human beings, we are selfish, right? But we just became even more so because we're just like, oh my God, Canada, and like, you know, is going through this.
COVID really exposed how unequal distribution of resources is in the world.
For sure.
Because it's like wealthy countries, even though we have resources, we're still not handling it that well.
Exactly.
So can you imagine for people like countries that don't have that?
Yeah.
It just like, I feel like everyone knew that everything was unequally distributed, but this just like makes it glaringly obvious.
Yeah, for sure.
Honestly, people need more perspective. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not gonna lie, like I've been there too. I was that dude being like, oh, I hate the lockdown, life's boring, blah 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 blah. But
yeah,
it can always be worse, so just stop complaining and just do what you have to do.
Yeah, that's
all I have to say
for sure.
But I guess we're coming to time, unless anyone has anything else. Anyone?
Well, it's not really international or anything, but it's kind of an interesting thing to end our show on a bit of a lighter note. So I don't know about you guys, but sometimes when it's like you haven't been paid yet, but it's the week that all the bills and rent and stuff are due, and you're just kind of broke until you get paid again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Apparently they're trying to implement a new wage access system in Canada, which has already been introduced in some parts of the US and also in Europe, mm-hmm. where you can actually access part of your paycheck before it's due. So like if your paycheck comes every 2 weeks, for example, but you pay bills 1 week and you don't have enough to last you until the actual pay week, you can draw from your pay earlier than the 2 weeks to get what you need.
Okay, that's
I think it's pretty interesting. And so they're saying that the only reason we really have like a 2 week pay period nowadays is because back in the days, like in older times, it took a long time and a lot of resources, like human resources, to run a payroll. So it made more sense to do it every 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. But like now everything's electronic and we can do it continuously all the time, so it's a lot easier.
Yeah.
And then after, like during World War One, I think that's when they started to like, how do you say it, to retain people's wages until 2 weeks, but instead of just paying them day to day, because that's how like that's how they gathered income tax to fund the war.
Okay.
Yeah. So instead of paying at the end of every day, since income tax is coming out, they would just accumulate all of the pay for the 2 weeks, and then the employer would take out the amount of income tax, and then you would get your pay without, minus the income tax at the end of those 2 weeks, mm-hmm. instead of just having to take out like income tax every single day. But like now we don't, like you're still going to be paying the income tax on it, but it's just that you get to access it faster. And then they're saying that it would reduce people's reliance on things like payday loans and all of that, and credit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because it's like you wouldn't be taxed on it as if it was a loan. You wouldn't be required to pay interest or anything because it's money that you've earned.
Right.
You know? So it's just giving you like some extra options for those times when you have to pay a lot of bills, but you're not getting paid until the next week. So you could eat real food instead of just eating ramen for that week.
Yeah.
Hey.
No, I've been there too, where like I would be waiting like the minute, I mean it depend on which job or whatever, but sometimes I would wait for the clock to hit so that the next day would, you know, so that the date would change so that I would have like my paycheck. And then I would be able to like make a purchase. I think there was an instance where I was in the store and I was waiting once again, because you know, and I was waiting, so then it hit and I was like, okay, now I can do it. And then I paid. But I think that could be helpful for a lot of people, right? Mm-hmm. It's interesting that I did, like you said, I think you said there's parts of the US that have already started doing this. So I think it'll be interesting to see how Canada would kind of implement that and have people make use of it. So that's interesting.
Yeah. Because, I mean, apparently half of Canadians are living paycheck to paycheck, which I wouldn't be surprised at all.
No, same. Yeah, I would think that that's the norm for most, but yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, like, the article is saying that payroll and getting your pay is, like, one of the longest waits that we have for anything nowadays, because now you can stream anything you want when you want, like, in seconds. You can play any music you want in seconds. You can have things delivered from Amazon even on the same day. You could have food delivered on the same day. So it's like, if you've already worked those hours, why do you have to wait so long to actually get your money?
That's actually true when you think about it, right? Yeah. I never used to think of it like that, but that's interesting.
Me neither. And I had no idea that it was such a outdated reason for it. Like, I thought there was really a good reason for paying people every 2 weeks.
Me too. I was like, okay, well, I mean, there must be a reason why it's so common, right? And
yeah,
then you explained the history behind that, and I was like, what? That was like so long ago.
Yeah, but I guess unless anyone else has any other stories, we can call that our show for this week.
Just real quick before we go, my cat died yesterday. Rest in peace, Chubby.
Oh no.
Best cat.
No,
sorry.
It's all good. Thank you guys. But yeah, now she's on the radio. So
Rest in peace. Well, yeah, thanks for tuning in, guys. My condolences to Jeffrey and his family.
Thank you.
Same.
Yeah, stay safe, and we'll see you next week. And after that, wait, sorry, are we going back to in-person next week? Or is it the week after?
I think
it depends on your year group. So if you're going back to in-person classes next week, enjoy your in-person classes. And if not, then enjoy your last week of being able to sleep through those 8:30s.
Adios, okay. Guys.
Thanks, bye. Guys. See you.